Monday morning, Spokane. You're listening to KYRS, Medical Lake Spokane. This is Praxis. I'm your host, Taylor Weech, and I am here today, live in the studio, filming for the first time for video podcast with Pastor Deb Conklin, William Cruz, and Justin Ellenbecker is about to join us. We're having an Occupy Spokane roundtable. So, how are you guys doing this morning?
Great.
Great.
Yeah. Who should we go first?
Deb, why don't you go
Deb,
first?
You can start off.
You're more of a morning person.
I am. Yeah,
but you're a champ for being out here. Thank you, Will.
Thank you.
So, Deb, just a quick, who are you and how'd you get involved in Occupy? And
wow. Well, my favorite way to describe myself is when I was in high school, I was an agitator. When I got to college, I became a protester. In my 20s, I became an attorney. In my 30s, I was a single mom. And in my 40s, I became a pastor. And all of those are about being a community organizer.
Definitely. So it's the arc of pretty much all over. So you're a pastor.
Yeah. So right now I'm a pastor. I have two tiny United Methodist churches. And then I am doing a ministry with Joel Williamson is a community organizer, and Lee Larson Andrews at Salem Lutheran, and Chris Christensen at Holy Trinity Lutheran, called The Oak Tree.
Thanks.
And the idea is to do a faith community that's about working on social justice issues and making a difference and changing the world, rather than, you know, getting together on Sunday morning and singing dead hymns and listening to somebody preach at you.
Nice. That sounds refreshing, to say the least. And I'm actually going to have Joel on the show next week to talk about The Oak Tree. So.
Right.
It's a nice full circle. So did you get involved in Occupy right at the beginning in Spokane?
Pretty much. In fact, as soon as Occupy Wall Street showed up, I started watching and I'm Googling Occupy in Spokane and finally found something and just started paying attention. Went to a couple of the early GAs down at the kitchen and have been involved ever since.
Nice. That's awesome. And how about you, Will? What's your... Who are you?
Who am I? Well, my political journey has been interesting, to say the least. I have been a lifelong libertarian anarchist / Republican. I've actually voted Republican in every single presidential election since Ronald Reagan.
Wow.
And
there's a hiss coming over there.
Yeah, the hiss.
We'll all get along.
My problem would have been gone back before Reagan, so you're
but,
okay.
What I find abhorrent, my disillusion started at the dot-com bubble when I had my own business and I was being charged four times my actual bill by WorldCom. Mm-hmm. And Bernie Ebers, the CEO of WorldCom, is now in prison, serving prison time for fraud. Companies were making more money than they ever had in their entire history, and yet they were willing to commit fraud to make ever more.
Mm-hmm.
And so my personal ethic of profit being a great thing and competitiveness being a great thing and winning being a great thing was polluted as far as I was concerned. And I see the sacred Constitution, second to me only to, you know, the holy words, being polluted by those, being used by those who call themselves patriots.
Mm-hmm.
And Occupy was the first thing to shatter my disillusionment in a long, long time. I saw a possibility for the world to rise up and throw off the yoke of the bosses, you know? Time for a worldwide union.
And that's your reason for being involved, is to
move
towards that?
I'm a firm believer in democracy and activism and holding all accountable and all being involved in the process and the decision-making and... the rule of law rather than the rule of force.
Mm-hmm.
And corporatism has become the rule of force. We no longer have choices in the process. The choices we're presented with are false. They're false choices.
Yeah. That doesn't sound too scary and radical. That's my hope with the show, is to just give a glimpse of, you know, what are the people doing this actually like and what's going on? Because you get a lot of that media image of Occupy. I talked a couple weeks ago with my friend Emmett, and I talked last week with John Waite about just kind of the way that the corporate media spun out Occupy. And it kind of, I think for a lot of the public, unfortunately, the image that stuck in their mind was these dirty, dirty people in parks. Do you think that that's true? Or do you think that more people are still kind of on board with the message?
I think there's still misperceptions. I mean, witness the foreclosure that happened in, was it Atlanta, where mm-hmm. this four generations of women are living together with this infant, and the DeKalb sheriff comes in with nine police cars and dozens of officers, and it's like it's a big drug bust, and it's just this helpless family. But because Occupy had decided to support them and had a presence, they treated it as if it was, you know, armed drug gangs. Which is insane.
It is.
And part of the problem is the media is so misrepresenting things. You know, like even the May 1st day, what we got out of Seattle was a few people in black who chose to be anarchists and damaging and disrupting. And yet the head of one of their Occupy movements was at Westlake saying, we're having fun. We're not doing anything violent. There's a celebration here of mm-hmm. May as, you know, Workers' Day and Freedom Day. But that didn't get covered by the main mm-hmm. media. So the media is focusing on this negative image to try to destroy Occupy. And it's backfiring.
Yeah. Why do you think it's backfiring, either of you?
I I'm a little bit more radical.
Yeah, he wants to.
In fact, I might be a lot more radical. I actually believe that all battles have their time and place, and all battles need to be fought. And I think that all warriors of various stripes serve their purpose. I think that the rich should fear. I think that they are incredibly greedy. They're destroying the planet. They're destroying the human race. They want it all. And they should fear the villagers at the gate with their pitchforks. I think that we have been incredibly patient. I'm astonished that there are no bankers that are in prison. I'm astonished that we rolled over for bankers paying themselves bonuses with our tax dollars. People should be in prison mm-hmm. for lengthy prison sentences. It's fraud of the highest order. It's you know, we should be storming the Bastille, and it hasn't happened yet. And so
that seems like one of the key arguments that I've heard from within Occupy everywhere, you know, is, do we storm the gates, you know, or do we peacefully build something else over here until it takes over, you know?
Ironically, I'm actually, as I'm saying that, I've been one of the main proponents of keeping peace with the city and having a good relationship with the police department. Mm-hmm. Because, and this is what I may not have always communicated, because one, we just don't have the soldiers. We don't have the bodies to go to jail. You know, one of the philosophies, I think, behind activists going to jail, frankly, is swarming the courts, swarming the jails, putting a burden on the system, I think, is one of the underlying ideas. Creating a big enough firestorm of energy that it gets noticed and taken seriously by the system to say, okay, we have to pay attention. We can't do that here in Spokane.
And part of the whole argument between, you know, let's do something illegal and get arrested and let's negotiate or let's stay within the law is because of that. Occupy Spokane is a prime example of that. Because last fall we had the occupation of the Triangle. We tried to set up an ongoing occupation at Franklin Park. And mm-hmm. those both were very effective for the time they were there, I think. And
I agree.
They burnt out the people involved. And so it became clear that if you want to create a movement that's actually going to do something, to change something, you have to recruit.
You do.
And mm-hmm. and you're not going to recruit the sorts of people that we need in order to be successful by having anarchy and having people smashing windows for no good reason.
Mm-hmm. And we really need to recruit the middle class, in my opinion, for several reasons, because they are the folks that are being squeezed the most. They're the folks, frankly, that are blinded by the propaganda of Fox News the most. And primarily because they're asked to carry the biggest burden of taxation. Every time any need is put forward, they're asked to foot the bill. They're also, you know, carrying the burden of unemployed young adults or teenagers and seniors at the same time. Mm-hmm. They're getting squeezed from every direction. And so when people say,
do they have time to join a movement then? Do you think that's what the issue is? Is that these people are already so overstretched that they feel that
what they don't understand is that their survival is at stake.
Right.
You know, their survival is just, the wolf is at the door. And
yeah. So it's like Michael Moore was on the program before this, and I heard him on my way in here, and he was saying that one of the things that Occupy has to do is we have to make it possible for people to participate who can't go to a lot of meetings, who don't have a lot of time. And that's absolutely true, because people who are working two jobs and trying to figure out how to arrange daycare and trying to just survive don't have time to get involved in something where you have to go to a lot of GAs, general assemblies and stuff like that. So we have to, I mean, I'm putting huge hours into this, and I've said several times, if I had a partner or kids at home, I I would be dead in the water.
Well, and that's probably, I think that's a lot of the reason that it's taken so long to get to this boiling point to launch Occupy, because these people are too downtrodden by the system they're trying to fight.
Exactly.
To be involved. And we've been joined in the studio by Justin Ellenbecker. Good morning.
Good morning. Sorry, I have this horrible habit of running on activist time, so my apologies for that.
It's all good. We are really good at winging it. So do you want to just introduce yourself real quick and talk about how you got involved in Occupy and what your what your story is?
Yes, my name, as described, is Justin Ellenbecker. I currently am with Peace and Justice Action League of Spokane, Washington Community Action Network, and multiple other groups. I got involved in Occupy because, to be honest, it was something that I was really waiting to see take place. For a number of years, I've been wondering, you know, when is the United States going to have something like this take place? When is that going to happen? And personally, for me, because of the direct result of multiple instances that that I was involved with, deployed overseas and other things like that, fighting to supposedly defend the liberties of individuals who we ended up, in most cases, taking them away from, I really felt the need to try and work hard to make things at least a little bit better.
Great. So it's a, it sounds like it's been a, an ongoing struggle for all of you that you then finally found an avenue into organizing with others through.
It's been great. I met these guys. I met a number of people through the movement, and I think all of us work with a variety of different movements. I recently joined the Leadership Council for WashCan. Mm-hmm. Done some awesome things with them, including we did a sit-in at Senator Zarelli's office. Senator Zarelli pushed through a draconian budget, which included, among other things, cutting the disability lifeline for 15 and 20,000 disabled adults here in Washington. Which would
and
have
did it in an underhanded way.
Did it in an underhanded way, yes. Which would have meant no housing, no medical care, and no food stamps for those people. Mm-hmm. Would have pushed the cost of those things to the cities. And we fought it, and we won on that count. There's more battles to be fought. And these guys are actually more, I've actually withdrawn a little bit from Occupy to focus on some of these other things. These guys are actually more involved in the day-to-day than I am. But, yeah.
Well, so that he brings up an excellent point there in that specifically, under the model that that everybody's been working under, the organic leadership model, that's really what it's about. If you see something that you feel that isn't being done or that you may possibly do better, step up and do that. That's exactly how it works. And if not, step back, take a break, and allow others to take up that that mantle, as it might be more of their subject matter expertise.
Mm-hmm. And has that been working in Spokane?
I would say yes, although it's been heavily criticized. But I believe as more individuals get involved, there will be a greater amount of people that you'll see this workload spread out among. As far as right now, a lot of it has been on the shoulders of a smaller amount of people than I would hope. But I see a lot of people getting inspired and seeing, hey, if they can do it, why can't I?
Mm-hmm.
So,
and that seems to be the attractive thing about this movement to a lot of people is that it's brand new. You know, I mean, it's obviously inspired by other horizontal people's movements throughout history, but at the same time, it's new for America. So I think people kind of see, this is a chance for me to do something creative and get involved in something that's never happened before. So just so historically, I want to make sure I have my history right with Occupy Spokane. You started at the Triangle, which is just across the street from the Federal Building on Monroe and Riverside.
Right in front of the Spokane Club.
Mm-hmm. And so the Triangle was kind of phase one, the way I saw it, right? Coupled with marches.
Sure.
And those early marches were huge.
Yeah, several hundred.
Hundreds of people, yeah. You know. Yeah. And one at least over 1,000.
Yeah.
Right?
There are a couple.
October 7th, mm-hmm. October 18th.
Yeah, we drew.
October 19th.
We drew the mayor and Tim Ormsby and the
Labor Council.
Labor Council and several other large groups.
Mm-hmm.
We shed some of those along the way, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be nice. I've always thought it'd be nice to ally with as many folks as possible.
I don't think in terms of the groups we shed them. I mean, when we did the Fat Cat Rally a couple of weeks ago, we had labor back. We had people back.
Right.
I think people are busy.
Yeah.
And that's, so they're not going to show up at everything. I mean, one of the strategic conversations we have is, does having a march every Saturday accomplish anything? I think it does, because it turns out to be this really good recruiting tool and community building tool, but not everybody can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to understand that this really is an organic leadership thing. And one of the ironies is the very people who value that also sometimes chafe at it.
Mm-hmm. And I have some footage from that march that you'll be able to see in video, but we can listen to it now. And hopefully after that, William, you're a musician.
Yeah.
And I've heard that you've been inspired to write some songs.
Yeah, yeah.
Based on this experience. So
yes.
Hopefully we'll have a live performance in the studio. We'll also be taking your calls at 509-747-3807. So while this video is playing, you can call in with your questions, and we'll get you on the air to talk to Pastor Deb Conklin, Justin Ellenbecker, William Cruz, and me. You're listening to KYRS Praxis, and this is just a little footage of the Fat Cat March on April 17th, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Cool. On the moon!
So that was Bart Hagen, I've just been told, by our guests here. We're doing an Occupy Roundtable. That was some footage from the Fat Cat Rally on April 17th outside of Bank of America. And you'll be able to see the crowd there if you watch the video when we post it later. I didn't realize who was speaking, but so Bart Hagen.
That's correct.
And he's 75.
Yes, and a very spry individual at that age.
He just did Bloomsday, and what did you tell me?
I believe he said 68 minutes or 67 minutes. He was disappointed that he didn't get in his targeted 62.
Well, I think that's pretty solid. When I'm 75, I hope I'm running that fast. But that's good, though, that you have all this energy. And it looks like, from the crowd, I mean, it looks to still be a really intergenerational, diverse group. And I think that's a big strength of this movement.
Especially considering that was on a weekday. I mean, it was unfortunate that tax day happened to be on a weekday here, but I was very surprised that we had such a significant turnout and so many different organizations being a part of that. That's really what I see as being the possible strength of this. There are so many progressive organizations that have been doing great things through the course of history, but too often they allow themselves to be dictated by the borders that others say exist around them, so that you don't have LGBT concerns crossing over with women's rights, crossing over with other civil rights. They're told, no, you have to stay in your own little compartmentalized areas. And hopefully what we can do is say, these borders do not exist. They are only in our minds. What is the chief concern among all of us is a greater, more just and peaceful world.
Mm-hmm. That's hard to argue with too.
Yeah. You know? Might be.
Yeah. So that's the goal. What else has been working so far in Spokane specifically, and what have been the challenges?
I'll speak to one of those things. I think, Bethany Copeland did something amazing, I think, with Turnout Against Citizens United. I think with some of the things, and Deb's been on this team, and I think you actually have been on the team, too, and working with the city. You got a meeting with the mayor.
Yes.
And actually, I think the Franklin Park outreach is another example of what we've been able to accomplish with the city. We're one of three cities, is that correct, that have passed a resolution in favor of Occupy, which I think is somewhat historic. And I think it's because we decided to keep a positive relationship with the city.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, in the Franklin Park outreach specifically, we pushed back against the permitting process and got them to extend our stay there by several days in spite of not having a permit, without violence, without arrests, without et cetera.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think about the whole, I've had this conversation with a lot of people involved in this and just in theory, getting permits from a city, you know, the whole concept of asking permission to protest. I understand that it's a concession that you have to make in some cases. Is that your opinion on it?
Well, I think we have to be careful. The reason I was willing to work on the permit, and I did, was because we were using a park. And one of the conversations we had back and forth, because some people were saying we need to just be able to go in and take over the park and do what we want to. And I'm kind of going, you know, I care about our parks. I think our parks are an important part of the city. And we need to work with the Parks Department to make sure that what we're doing isn't going to damage the park. If we had been, you know, on a street or someplace else, that would have been a different question. But this question really was about working with Leroy ID and the Parks Department to say, how can we do what we need to do to express our protest without doing anything that's going to damage the park? And I think that collaboration actually was positive.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. And I see one of the key points that that we must continually critically evaluate is whether things must be reformed or revolutionized. Each and every one of these issues has to be tackled in that sort of way. One of the key tenets of nonviolence is that you do not try to approach somebody who disagrees with you as your enemy and in an attempt to force them to come to your side because it is more logical and better and more ethical and so on and so forth. No, you try to find ways to win the individuals over, finding common ground under which you can agree on. These individuals who are working on the parks boards and with the Parks Department, they care in some way, shape, or form for some of the things that we care about.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we can find those areas of middle ground and then possibly be able to extend that bridge and make it all the more stronger, then why not? The key goal here is to not go to war with those who have already declared war on us. It's to let them know, you know what? You're actually on our side.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a great point. Most of Spokane is Main Street. It's not Wall Street. Even the police department are union men and women. And when the budget cuts come, police and fire are among the first to suffer. So, you know, it takes some sophistication, actually, in your worldview to not be constantly adversarial. It's a little bit adolescent, actually. It's easy to be adversarial. It's easy to create straw men in situations and get angry every single time. You know? And I'm the guy that was just preaching radicalism earlier, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's a time and a place for everything. If people are willing to negotiate, if you border your neighbor, you have to negotiate. You have to compromise. That is, in essence, politics. I mean, that was kind of my evolution from anarchy when I realized that government is, in effect, two people coming to an agreement about something for their mutual benefit. There has to be some give and take in that process.
So that's what you want to move back to?
Well,
you're not. You don't want to smash the state. You want to regain control of it.
Well,
by
I,
the people.
Absolutely, it's okay. It's of, by, and for the people. And I, you know, there's nothing inherently wrong with profit. There is nothing inherently wrong with profit, but those who profit illegally through fraud, through coercion, through deceit, especially with the cooperation of the state, you know, and a fraudulent illegal Congress. I mean, the post office is a great example. I don't know if you know the story of the post office.
A little bit.
Yeah. A Congress forcing the post office to pre-fund the pension fund up to 75 years. Now the post office is nearly bankrupt and is having to close countless offices. It didn't get a dime from the taxpayers. But so they could shuffle that money to Wall Street. It's just, you know, we live in an incredibly fraudulent time where our Congress is illegally colluded with the robber barons. And so they're stealing from the people. They're stealing from the future. They're stealing from the planet. And but that's not Spokane necessarily. That's not our neighbor necessarily. That's not the business down the street necessarily. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to cooperation, not confrontation. Whenever we can.
Well, and one of the ironies of the Saturday marches is we'll show up at Chase and Bank of America and Wells Fargo, and the people that deal with us, those bank tellers that are working on Saturday and the security people that are working, are they're the ones who are getting paid, you know, $20,000, $30,000, maybe $40,000 a year, while the CEOs somewhere else in the country are making millions of dollars a year. And at I think it's Bank of America, the CEOs make over 400 times as much as the bank tellers. And so the people who actually are the front line dealing with the protesters ought to be protesting with us. And they're not, because they need a job. They need to make a living. They need to feed their kids. Mm-hmm. And the people that we're really protesting against aren't the ones that have to deal with us.
Mm-hmm. So do you think, but do you think it's still effective to be in those locations to bring awareness to what the corporation as a greater whole does?
Yeah, I think it's important to keep getting that message out and making that statement.
I think, I mean, on those specific banks alone, we've already seen how a large group of people is able to make a change. Bank of America was looking to enact that $5 additional fee, and enough people stood up and said something against it. If enough people can continue to stand up and say things against some of these different policies, we might see a positive change.
Well, and I think Move Your Money is a huge Occupy potential success. I mean, we've had some success, we've made some progress, but if you know, middle class people would just understand that there are local banks and credit unions that don't have the same fees, that are better places to keep your money, that are safer places to keep your money, actually. I don't even understand why anybody's still banking with Chase or Bank of America or Wells Fargo. It just makes no sense to me.
I think the greatest success in the Move Your Money campaign is now when we go out and talk to people about moving their money to credit unions and local banks. We actually hear the vast majority of them say, I already have.
Nice.
So, I mean, it's very difficult to find a lot of people. And the next step in that is getting businesses and organizations to move their money
into
those.
City.
Yes. I think educating people is key. I mean, when I would go out and talk to people about the fee on the EBT cards that Chase does, people were outraged, you know, because every time you swipe your EBT card, Chase gets 85 cents.
Yes.
Every single time. And that's not told to the consumer. It's not shared with anyone. And just sharing that simple example, I think that alone got at least huge. 6 or 7 people to leave, you know. So education is huge. And same with art. I know Will is a musician. And you've written an Occupy song, at least one. You've written a bunch, right?
I've written a bunch, yeah.
Cool. So do you want
some of which we probably couldn't play on the air?
Yeah. Keep in mind.
Most of which we couldn't play. In fact, I have one to show you. It's pretty dark. You know what? I'll give it to you later.
But there's no dirty words.
There's no dirty words. Well, there's only one slightly dirty word in this.
Oops. Well, use your. I trust you. You're grown. All right. So William Cruz is going to perform one of his Occupy songs right now, live for you in the studio.
Can you hear that? Okay. Okay. If I feel my destiny, a melody and harmony, casting off this hovel, and I'm living your system of broken glass Broken heroes, broken ass, all of you are taken and are given. You're agitators for the man. Well, they poison wells of understand. Pee in your electric conversation. We used to be the shining light the world could all get dizzy by. Sweet land of liberty is over. I want to change the world. I want love and good times, baby. I want to change the world. I want to realize love and good times. It's a long, long way to paradise. And don't look down or you might slip twice. All we have is right now. 'Cause tomorrow they may shut it all down somehow. See this light above, this tent of mine. Oh, darling, let's occupy. Oh, stars shine above this tent of mine. Sweet baby, let's occupy. Let's procreate some politics. Kick the hell out of some Wall Street dicks. How can I say that? And in the end, we will win. Just you and me and mine, 99. I want to change the world. I want love and good times, baby. I want to change the world. I want to realize love and good times. It's a long, long way to paradise. And don't look down or you might slip twice. All we have is right now. 'Cause tomorrow they may shut it all down somehow.
Very nice. Can we clap? Yeah, we can clap.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. That was William Cruz live in the studio playing. What's the title of your song?
First time on the radio, so that was new, getting the mix down, but interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it turned out pretty well.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. So you're listening to KYRS, Medical Lake Spokane. The show's called Praxis. Every week we're talking about local, state, national politics on a practical level. What can you actually do in your community? That's what I want to focus on. And you all with Occupy, Deb, Justin, and Will are doing something out there. What's the best part of your experience with Occupy so far, and what are you most looking forward to this year?
Personally, for me, there has been some incredible chances to be able to make some, to get rid of some of the gaps that have currently existed. I've spoken to a large number of educators who have been told that they couldn't teach certain things related to the curriculums that they are supposed to teach to, or because they are too controversial or things of that nature. And in direct response to that, speaking to these educators and speaking to some other individuals, we've decided to launch what is going to be the Spokane People's University. And this is going to be taking place at community buildings. Ideally, among them is going to be included the Spokane City Council Chamber. And it sounds it's kind of been juggling back and forth on whether we can use it or not. I've made some, let's just say, not friends out of some city council members, but
not friends. Yes. I like that. As opposed to enemies,
that's
good.
An understatement.
You're not friends yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe I can get them back. But either way, it's going to give some of these wonderful individuals incredible chances to be able to teach, not for the purpose of having something to hang up on your wall, not for the purpose of teaching to a specific curriculum that is set up in order to keep people compartmentalized into their ways of thinking, but education for the sake of education. There used to be a time in our history where an individual that was self-educated was considered a very bright and thoughtful individual because they had taken that much effort to get that done on their own. Now, if you're self-educated, you're a laughingstock.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what? This is a chance for people to get out there and work with other subject matter experts, including a number of professors. We have individuals from Eastern Washington University, Gonzaga, Whitworth, SEC, SFCC, and subject matter experts, including the lovely Liz Moore of the Peace and Justice Action League,
nice.
Which is also in this building, who's going to be teaching on community organization. We have Professor Stacy Kalko that's going to be teaching on historiography. I mean, just an incredible class right there. You know, why do we create history the way that we do? And so many other amazing, wonderful topics. And I encourage anybody who's interested in being able to express anything with other individuals to be a part of that.
When does it start?
We are hopefully going to be starting this next week. Through working with Deb here, we've come up with some additional locations just in case the rug gets pulled out from under us or attempts to be done so again. But the fact of the matter is this is moving forward in spite of what others might want to do. And really, you can't stop education.
Mm-hmm.
And the next really big thing that I'm personally almost shaking, I'm so excited about, is the volunteer fair that we've been organizing for May 19th called We Can Spokane. We've spoken to so many individuals of all these different volunteer agencies that they do incredible things. Like we had a woman come down and speak at our General Assembly for Habitat for Humanity. And she talked about how they had built 7 homes in the Spokane area with something like 17 volunteers. And while that's great, it's unfortunate that there's only that number of volunteers
mm-hmm.
for such a large metropolitan area. Imagine if we can increase that tenfold. Imagine if we can do that for these other groups. I know personally, working with Veterans Conservation Corps, they help a great number of veterans who have this dutiful desire to contribute back to their communities that is instilled by the time that they spend in the military. And for a lot of individuals, as they transition out, they no longer have that. And it is somewhat of a culture shock. But this is an opportunity to have these amazingly well-trained individuals actually giving back into their communities. And we're going to be including any volunteer agencies that actually believe in helping individuals out. So if the KKK has a volunteer agency, we're not going to be helping them. But
people doing good work.
Exactly. Yeah. And Occupy Spokane is looking to cover the full bill for this so that we don't have to worry about charging these financially strapped agencies the cost of tabling, like is what's associated mm-hmm. at so many other events. And we've talked to multiple politicians, which is kind of, you know, but we've talked to them about coming and speaking specifically on what volunteerism does in the community. Not speaking on specific pitches to their political campaigns, mm-hmm. but on how they've actually seen volunteerism make a difference in their community. So we're using that to make it more of a media event, because otherwise we're not going to be able to pay for the advertising. But hopefully that'll draw something.
Sounds good.
But that week of May 13th to the 19th is going to be a huge week. The sort of tied together piece is West Central's doing this convergence. That's going to be amazing.
I'm glad you're talking about that. That's something I've been...
Yeah,
really interested in seeing.
So the official kickoff for that is Sunday evening at Salem, a big community event. There's sort of going to be a little bit of a pre-event for the Oak Tree.
Salem Lutheran Church, right?
Salem Lutheran.
On West Broadway.
1428?
Yeah, that's 1428 West Broadway. I should know that. But there's also going to be a sort of a little pre-event for the Oak Tree, because that's our third Sunday story sharing event. And so we will actually be there at 4 for the story sharing and then move into the convergence. But also in the midst of that, there will be a number of events. The Washington Faith Action Network is doing a fundraising luncheon on Wednesday afternoon at Salem. And then on Friday, the 18th, there's a national Robin Hood Tax Day that we're trying to organize a local event around. And that's the notion that every one of those Wall Street transactions could pay, you know, a tenth of a penny tax every time they buy or sell
Great
a stock or do any of those transactions. And it would raise billions of dollars for the budget deficit.
And they're fighting it.
Yeah, and they're fighting it.
Of course.
A tenth of a penny. And they're fighting it. Because in principle, they're opposed to it. And so so there's all these events going on that whole week that are all about how we build community and how we change the rules in a way that lets small businesses thrive, that lets the middle class survive, because make no mistake, the middle class is at risk right now.
Mm-hmm. And
we are shrinking and we
and
could
gone
die.
In some places. I mean, I think Spokane in a lot of ways is sort of, a friend of mine calls it the Shire, you know, Spokane.
Absolutely.
We're very insulated from a lot of the problems that a lot of the country's already really deep in right now. But it's really good to see all this kind of grassroots, especially grassroots education. I think that's so huge that people don't need to be reliant on big systems to learn. You know, you just need a book. You just need the internet. You just need someone who knows something. So,
well, and one of the things that we're doing with the Oak Tree that Joel will probably talk about is that notion of education. So we've already done 4 classes now. The first one was an economic justice class where we studied David Corton's work on, you know, what's happened to America and the corporatocracy and the way we've moved from any semblance of a free market or real capitalism to this horrible mockery of a market system. And in particular, we have an ongoing group out of that class that's working at figuring out how do we restore a healthy local economy. And our dream, my passion is that the next time Wall Street comes and to Congress and tries to blackmail Congress, we can say, we don't need you.
Mm-hmm. And we really, and that's a great point, we really have to divorce ourselves from the parasites, the parasitical economy. Things like gardening. Gardening is actually one of the most revolutionary acts you can do right now.
Well, and that's the food justice class that we mm-hmm. did as
food
our second
justice.
Class.
Another organization is called the Time Bank, which mm-hmm. is a sort of barter.
Spokane Time Exchange, yes.
Spokane Time Exchange, which is sort of a barter system mm-hmm. where you put work, put hours in, et cetera.
And I've talked to them. I want to bring them on also. But the whole concept of that's really revolutionary because an hour is an hour is an hour.
Yeah.
It's not that your hour... because you have a PhD is worth more than, you know, my 8-year-old cousin's hour teaching you how to garden or something like that. You know, everyone's hours are worth the same. And I think that makes people antsy, but I think it makes them think too. And that's important.
Well, that's a great point on that, because honestly, there is only one currency that we all share equally. And it's the 24-hour day.
Mm-hmm.
That's an excellent
if
point.
If that's how you want to label it, you know. In the hours, you know, but yeah, we all have time, and that's all we all really have.
Some
so.
Of us only have
20. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Love, yeah,
I was gonna say, I have this sleep thing that I try to do, but
some of us have 4 hours.
Yeah.
So this last week, not to divert too much from talking about, you know, new systems, but we've had a dramatic and exciting week in politics as well.
Yeah.
Last week was pretty crazy. Just to catch people up if you weren't paying attention last week. Lisa Brown, our longtime Senate Majority Leader in the state of Washington, in the midst of her reelection campaign, decided to stop her reelection campaign, thus unleashing a flurry of activity at the Dems office just down the road trying to figure out who to run for her seat. And Andy Billig stepped up to do that from the state house, then leaving his seat open and causing a similar flurry. So as of right now, confirmed that I know, Marcus Riccelli was the first to step up to run for Andy's seat. John Waite, who was actually my guest last week before he was a candidate, thankfully, because otherwise we'd have to invite all these other candidates too. He's declared also as a Democrat. John Snyder, one of our city councilmen, is also running. Tim Benn, I just saw, is a Republican who's running. I've heard rumors of at least three other people who aren't confirmed. So,
wow.
Are you guys still, are you invested still in traditional politics, even though you're part of Occupy, or is it something?
I am absolutely, that's absolutely the direction I'm moving in. That's one reason that I am very dialed in with WashCan, and these guys are too, but what we were able to, we had to work with WashCan to work on the budget because of the draconian cuts that were coming, not just to the Disability Lifeline, mm-hmm. but to TANF grants and to education, and we had to fight it on the legislative level, and more of those are coming. In fact, I'm still working with WashCan where we're doing a project on the HEN issue for Disability Lifeline. I think that's where the fight is, unless you want to pick up the bottle or the gun or the Molotov cocktail.
But there is a strong disagreement in even just in Occupy Spokane. We have some people who are adamant that the political system is so badly broken that it's not even ethical to take part in it, and that we should be boycotting the elections. And then we have those of us who are participating and are involved. And, you know, my response to the boycott is, vote for Mickey Mouse, vote for something else. But if you don't vote, then the corporatocracy just gets to say you don't care. Mm-hmm. So if you want to make a point, then vote for something that makes a point.
Then vote for
don't
yourself.
Just not vote.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And in addition to that, I mean, we've had controversial issues come up, like one of our first fundraiser events was directly in support of the LGBT Center. And a lot of some individuals questioned the involvement of, is this really an Occupy-related issue to be working with this? And to me, equality is an Occupy issue. But for each individual, it's up to them to decide. To me, Occupy is everything that Occupy isn't. And I know that sounds like a Donald Rumsfeld type, you know, we know what we know and we don't know what we don't know type statement. But to honestly stop for a second and look at it, you know, other than, you know, trying to take advantage of individuals and take them for all that they're worth and trying to, you know, rape Mother Earth and pillage everything. Other than the things that Occupy is against, Occupy can be all of those things that are positive and have a positive avenue. And individuals can choose whether they want to be a part of that specific campaign or not. Mm-hmm. I know I personally supported certain things that I'm not 100% behind just because I see the passion in other individuals and their belief in how it's going to accomplish great things. And then in some cases, I just don't align up with that campaign, but we'll go with other ones. It's we have the choices there.
The other thing that's really going to be exciting is we have one of our active Occupy people has decided to run against Kevin Parker in the 6th.
Mm-hmm. And I was just reading about that.
Yeah, so Wayne Kyle Spitzer has announced that he's running against Kevin Parker. And this will be a very different campaign. It will be all about grassroots. He will have a lot of Occupy people doorbelling and working for him. So it's going to be really interesting to see if, you know, because we have been so consciously not political, and the national movement has been adamant that we're not going to be co-opted by any party. We're not going to become the Democratic Tea Party. But to see if we can actually raise up a viable candidate with the values that we talk about in terms of bringing back power to Main Street and the middle class from the corporatocracy and the 1%, it's going to be an interesting campaign.
For full disclosure, I should also add that I am Wayne Kyle Spitzer's campaign manager.
That's new.
I did not know that.
You heard it first.
How about
on
that?
Praxis.
All right. Well.
But to echo what Deb has said there's absolutely several different ways of looking at this. Okay, we want to change the system, so we can either allow it to change as we interact with it, which is going to be a very time-consuming process, or we can actively get involved and force change, which is very difficult to do nonviolently, or we can find ways that we can become part of these things and change them back the way that they were originally planned. Democracy, or the Republican democracy that we have in this country, was not originally a flawed ideal. And so maybe we can change it back to not being as flawed as it is.
And I would and I would say just one thing. I think you have to fight every battle. I think this is one of the arguments that's bothered me a little bit in Occupy. Whether this battle is important, or whether this battle is important, or whether your battle is important, you have to fight every single battle. Every strategy we can, do everything we can.
You have to fight every battle you have the energy to fight.
Yes. Thank you for that qualification.
Great. Well, thank you all for being on the show today. Thanks for getting up early in some cases, if you're not morning people, and being here. This has been Praxis Weekly, live at 10 a.m. Next week, we'll be talking to Joel Williamson of the Oak Tree about a faith community and some of the political organizing they're doing. And we will be there. We're also video podcasting for the first time. So check out kyrs.org, and there will be a link there under my show page. Thank you, Robert Foote at CMTV, for coming out in the morning, too, to be the camera operator. You're a champ. So have a great day, and thank you all for listening in.